It is 6:06 on the Central Coast on this Monday, December 2nd, 2019. I'm Dave Congleton. Good to be with you. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow on this broadcast, we're going to meet a woman who went to the Arctic and survived on her own for 73 days. Interesting story to tell. You may have seen her on the History Channel. We're also going to give our friends in the nonprofit community a chance to call in because it's Giving Tuesday. And kind of put the spotlight on the great work that they're doing. It is a Dave Congleton show, always your hometown radio talk show. In this final hour, I want to focus on Mexico and what is happening on the border and just south of the border with the increasing power of the Mexican cartels. There has been a lot of reports in the media lately about violence involving the cartels, specifically the unfortunate incident where the LDS families, I believe there was three mothers and six children were killed. Rich spends a lot of his time south of the border. He joins us now to talk about this issue. Rich, good evening.
Good evening. I'm here in La Paz, Mexico now.
And, you know, Rich, there's so much to talk about. We'll certainly include phone calls in a little bit. But I just want to start and ask you to kind of give an overview about what has been going on with the cartels, say, in the last year.
Yeah, it's kind of been a difficult time in Mexico because with a new president came in a little over a year ago, and his approach, prior to that, it was, I didn't want to use the word war, but they kind of did the war on drugs where they took a very aggressive stand against the cartels, going after them, killing, arresting, trying to lessen them. And the new president came in and said, look, that there's basically too many people being killed. Our approach is going to be to go after them financially and try to have less, basically, machine gun street battles, which were going on. That's not had too great of success. You know, actually, there were actually the federal police force that had arrested and captured the son of El Chapo in a town, the state of Sinaloa in Culiacan. They actually took hostages of the local school and government agencies, threatening the federal government, if you don't let, you know, the son of El Chapo go, we're going to start killing people. And the federal government intervened. So there's a lot of question here amongst the locals' population. Is this approach to dealing with the cartel going to reduce violence, or is it going to embolden the cartels? And there's been a lot of high profile, you know, 21 people killed in one town, you know, 14 people in another. Now, granted, the U.S. has mass shootings, you know, so it's not to say that Mexico is the only country in the world that has this problem, but to put it into perspective murder-wise, you know, the U.S. has five homicides per 100,000 people. Mexico currently has 27 homicides per 100,000. So it's significantly more violent south of the border, but most of that violence is cartel on cartel violence, where a lot of locals look the other way because innocents weren't involved. But as the violence escalates, more and more innocent people are winding up in the crossfire, and people are worried about it.
And that's what we saw with the LDS families. They ended up, they were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, they were basically ambushed by, you know, people with submachine guns, not just, you know, rifles and, you know, shotguns and 22s, but we're talking kind of full-grade military rifles, shot down their group of cars that were heading towards a family wedding. And, you know, six children, three women were killed in that thing with others wounded. And it's just, there is a state of fear down here in terms of interacting with the cartel. And even the local police in many of these towns in Mexico just don't want to prosecute, don't want to arrest, don't want to get involved with the cartel in terms of a law enforcement issue because they outgun the police, they have more resources than the police. And they have no hesitation, not just to kill you, but to kill your family, your relatives, your friends, if you take a stand against them. So there's a lot of fear, And I'm not sure if there's a universal feeling that the U.S. designating the cartel as terrorist organizations is actually going to help or hurt.
That was going to be my next question, reminding people that President Trump has said that he wants to declare the terrorists, the cartels as a terrorist organization. What would that gain, and is that really a good strategy, Rich?
Well, a lot of the Mexican English language papers that I read down here, it's up for debate. From a national perspective, the Mexicans view it as an insult and kind of a slap in the face of, all right, now our big brother to the north, in addition to all the other insults that they may see coming from the Trump administration, they now see it as a, hey, look, you're now telling us that we can't govern ourselves, we can't police ourselves, you know, that there are some people making it sound like there's going to be U.S. boots on the ground. I think that's just a little overreaction. I think what they were looking for to do, and Trump saying that, and what a lot of the Mexicans view it as a banking, as a groups that support the cartels, they would be able to go after their resources, because the locals know that the drugs are grown here, made here, shipped to the U.S. 90% of the heroin comes from Mexico. But on the flip side, 70% of the illegal weapons that are seized here in Mexico and used in crimes, and 4 out of 10 of that 70% come from Texas. But 70% of the guns are traced to gun dealers north of the border. So there's that feeling of, yes, our cartels and lack of enforcement is sending drugs to the U.S., but let's also be honest and say 70% of the guns that are killing Mexicans and killing locals are coming from the U.S. So
are they coming legally, Rich?
No, they're being smuggled, just as drugs are being smuggled out of Mexico into the U.S., illegal guns are being smuggled from the U.S. that are purchased legally at gun stores, and then they're being put through straw buyers, and some of them purchased it privately through gun shows that are then finding their way into the hands of the cartels.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Rich is joining us from La Paz to talk about the increasing violence with the drug cartels in Mexico and what, if anything, can be done. I'm Dave Congleton. This is AM 920 FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show. Glad to be with you. California headline news at the bottom of the hour. We're talking about the drug cartels in Mexico and the violence that seems to be increasing over the course of the last year. We're back with Rich, who divides this time between Morro Bay and La Paz. And Rich, as we come back to you, so what's the level of concern about among you and your fellow expatriates down there? Has your concern got up as well, or do you feel safe?
You know, I feel safe in La Paz, and I think most of the expat community, the areas that we tend to settle in, there's a lot of Americans down here. Mexico is the number one spot for people leaving the U.S. living. Both Americans and Canadians are quite a few down here. The areas we tend to congregate in aren't the areas that have the big drug traffic. The main area seems to, you know, I'm in Baja, California, about 2 hours north of Cabo San Lucas. Most of the drug trafficking happens on the Texas border, so it's over on the mainland. And those, because of their temperature, humidity, and general environment, aren't the typical spots that the expats want to settle in. You know, so we don't. And there's also the aspect of just the realities. Mexico courts not only the cruisers, the people on boats, but they really have a courting process where they want it to be easy for expats to come here and retire. You know, because $1,500 a month, you're living quite comfortably in a, you know, $300 apartment with a swimming pool. and your life can be pretty good on what my wife and I jokingly say is under the bridge wages in the U.S.
Yeah.
So crime against, not to use the term pejoratively, but crimes against gringos, the criminal element knows that if you're going to go after and rob, some of these folks that they want down here, they're going to investigate it. They're going to find it. It's going to make international news. So in somewhat, a lot of the expat community has a little halo of protection around us just because it's almost not worth messing with us from a dollar standpoint.
I've been told that you're safe if you're in Baja and you stay away from mainland Mexico. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I think Baja, to me, and a lot of people that are down here, almost feels like an extension of Southern California. Many of the locals I know have family in California. They've traveled back and forth, and it really does have that Southern California feel maybe 40 years ago, where mainland Mexico has much more of the cartel influence. That's not to say they're not here. There's drug busts periodically in the area. And, when you see the military driving through the streets with their automatic weapons in the back of the truck, which, you don't see in the States. But, my wife and I feel pretty safe down here, as well as the other expat community.
Would you encourage people to visit Mexico, or would you urge them to use caution?
I get that question a lot from my friends and family. And the business we run, we interact with cruisers and expats down here quite a bit. So I get that question a lot. And my comment is always, if you're coming down here to be in a bar at 3 a.m. and be drunk, and if you're wanting to buy some illegal drugs down here, go somewhere else. Because all it takes is being drunk and insulting and fighting the wrong person, or looking to buy some marijuana from the wrong dealer who is in the middle of a cartel dispute and not, quote, allowed to sell on that street or that area because it's somebody else's turf, and then you're caught up in the crossfire. So, but if you're not looking for trouble, it's as safe here as in any other place in the U.S.
We're talking about what's happening with the Mexico cartels and what's been happening on the border lately. And what about the, for lack of a better term, the influence of the Trump administration over Mexico? How has that contributed to the cartels?
I think it's a tough topic because everyone either, likes Trump or dislikes him so viscerally that anything Trump does, at least from the Mexico perspective, even the local friends I talk to that are business owners, they're educated Mexicans, they have higher degrees. Almost everything Trump says is insulting to a large portion of Mexico, and that's just being honest about it. The way he goes about it, whether it's politically or for his choice of words. So even if Trump does something that is supportive to Mexico, I think he's not a good messenger because of his past and his comments to try to fix the problem. So, from down here, all the expat community, whether you're a conservative or a liberal, almost doesn't matter. You cringe a little bit when Trump starts talking about Mexico issues because, you almost feel the need to tell people, hey, look, not everyone talks or thinks like that.
Yeah, but I would also assume that there are those who want the United States to do more to not, I don't mean secure the border, but to stabilize the situation.
Yeah, they are looking for help, and that is true because, 56, I was reading a Mexican poll, and 56% of Mexicans disapprove of how the current administration, meaning the Mexican government's handling the cartel and crime situation. They do want the U.S.'s help. They want us to stem the flow of illegal maybe in the U.S., but illegal guns streaming into Mexico. And that's the double-edged sword, because to do that, you have to have more border type of enforcement. And, the U.S. with its Second Amendment isn't necessarily going to outlaw some of our guns that are legal that end up finding their way down to Mexico.
But one thing we could do, and I know this takes us in another direction before the news break, but one thing we could do, Rich, would be to undercut the cartels by legalizing more of the drugs.
Well, and that is a big argument down here. And over the last few years, Mexico has, if not legalized, they decriminalized a lot of the some of the drugs, the marijuana, some of the other, you know, as you call them, softer drugs, if you will. You know, they're no longer making arrests for people with smaller amounts of marijuana. I think that eventually, just like some of the states in the U.S., Mexico will decriminalize to try to stem the flow. But there's also this reality. I was reading an article in the L.A. Times. As drugs get more difficult to move across the border and with the increased scrutiny on them, the cartels moving into human smuggling, they're now taking over avocado groves because avocados are a huge export from Mexico. They're now starting to extort businesses. You know, once you have a criminal enterprise that has literally more money than the government of Mexico, you have the power to get into other areas that can keep your money stream going. So if drugs were illegal tomorrow, I'm afraid that a lot of the Mexicans feel without a better rule of law system down here, a lot of that illegal activity will go into extorting businesses, other type of crimes where they feel it's easier to make large amounts of money without actually being legal and working.
We have a question on our Stolberg Law KVC text line. Listener wants to know what prevents the Mexico military from just battling the cartels.
Well, and that's a good question, and that is the approach of the previous administration prior to the, his nickname's kind of ALMO, A-L-M-O. That was the approach, and it just led to almost OK Corral-style 30-minute gun battles between police with, you know, out in the streets with bullets sprayed all over neighborhoods. Lots of the local Mexicans were harmed. And, you know, it's one way to go about it, but they did that for the last 10 years, and it, you know, we're at the record crime or record drug violence Mexico's seeing right now. So a lot of people are saying, we tried that for 7 to 10 years, it didn't work, we need to try another approach. And honestly, I'm not sure, I don't have the answers myself, but something needs to be done because a lot of Mexicans are living in fear of the cartel violence.
And that just fuels their desire to leave the country and go elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I think it does. And, yeah. And, you know, my wife and I run a business here, and we have our emergency plan. If someone or a group of people come into our office and say, hey, look, this is a great business you guys have here, we need to help you keep it safe. So for 10,000 pesos a month, we can keep you and your business safe. Everyone knows what that means. That's the cartel extortion. And, you know, we'll pack our car and be back in Morro Bay in 24 hours.
All right, Rich, stay with us as we talk about what's happening with the drug wars and the Mexico cartels. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. Here's the news.
KVC.
Don't forget to start your Tuesday morning off with First Look. Andy Morris and Scott Taylor have you covered with everything you need to know to get you out the door from 6 to 9, followed by Mr. Rush Limbaugh from 9 until noon, followed by Mark Wilson and our own Craig Hill from noon until 2 p.m. We give you a short dose of Dave Ramsey after that, and then Craig and I will join you at 3:05 for the Tuesday edition of Hometown Radio. We're back talking with Rich, our man down in Mexico. We were talking about the increasing violence being caused by the drug cartels and what, if anything, can be done. As we come back to you, Rich, incoming text on the Stolberg Law KVC text line, a listener writes, we should annex Baja and Sonora. President Polk wanted to annex the whole place, but it didn't work out. What do you think about that idea? You want to be annexed?
Well, in a lot of ways, one of the reasons a lot of expats like it down here is it's not the U.S. in terms of high prices and regulations, and there's so much natural beauty, I'd almost hate to see the whole thing turn into Southern California, which is I'm afraid it would. know, but it's using that line, it almost strikes at some of the fears at what this terrorist designation would do, because there's always this feeling that the U.S. is imposing its will and bullying our way through things. And
before you go there, let's take a call. We got Scott in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Dave. Hey, Scott. Hello, Rich.
Hi.
Hi. You know, I was just Googling this, and I heard about Mark Levin talking about it, and then I saw an interview with Sir Vicente Fox in Mexico, and he says that the bigger the legalization of pot in the United States has caused the cartels to stress out on making money, and that has made a rapid legalization of fentanyl and opioids coming from Mexico. We've lost, I believe, according to what I just read, about 69,000 people died from opioid overdoses last year. Now, I'm thinking, you know what? If we really wanted to, it's really hard to control these drugs coming across the border. If we were to turn around legalization of pot and make it proper for the cartels again, that would probably, they would probably sway on and selling over, opioid drugs in this country, because it's a problem that's never going to stop on the opioids. Do you agree with that, Rich?
Well, I think it's one of those type of issues where whatever you decriminalize, you know, you squeeze a water balloon of the criminal element on one side and it bulges out on the other. If we legalize opioids, then there'll be some other type of drug that the criminal element moves to make money. So I don't know that you can ever beat it by trying to just decriminalize what the criminals are trying to produce and move around.
Scott?
Yeah, well, you have more Latino politicians in California. It's almost like they're hurting the business of the cartels and supporting legalization of pot. And who knows what next is going to be legalized. I don't think opioids should ever be legalized, especially fentanyl.
No.
You know, so, another thing is there's a lot of fentanyl is coming from China as well. But how are you going to stop? I don't know. The cartels, you just can't stop at what they're doing. And I'm just seeing that this is never going to end.
Well, that's what a lot of the fears are of the Mexican people, that they're kind of stuck in the middle. And I hear this from some of my friends here, that whatever vice the Americans have north of the border, the criminal element, there's too much money to be made to not supply that vice. So if it's opioids, if it's marijuana, if it's sex trafficking, you name it, whatever the vice is, that's going to be supplied because of the easy access, you know, through the southern border of the U.S. So don't know how you fix that.
There'll always be smuggling something. The question is, what is it that they're smuggling?
Well, what about the border wall? I mean, this just comes up to the border wall issue. I mean, Democrats want the wall down. The Republicans want the wall up to protect citizens. And, you know, people are dying in the result of that issue.
Well,
can we both agree on that?
I'm a wall guy. I mean, I'm a wall guy. But I also view something like this as using the wall slogan is too simple, because the money is so intense that no matter what type of wall we put up, when there's billions of dollars, and we're talking billions of dollars at stake, that there's always going to be a way to get it across, whether you have a 20-foot wall or a tunnel underneath it or drones flying over it.
They'll find a way because there's so much money at stake.
And the other thing I would add is that they're getting a lot of our guns, and they're being out. The cartels are out outnumbering their guns in the military and the police forces over there, and that's also a problem as well. Can you imagine that the cartels have better weapons than the military does?
Well, there are weapons.
And that's what's kind of hard for maybe the average American to imagine, is that you know the bad guys that live in your town not only have better firearms than the local police, if you know of someone doing something illegal, the local police may know about it, but they're too afraid to confront those bad element because they're outgunned. They don't have the resources to stand up to the cartel. So the local police just kind of typically stay out of it, which is why the federal government in Mexico has taken the lead role in fighting the cartels, because the local communities, even though everyone knows who the drug cartel members are, everyone lives in fear of offending them or being on their hit list.
All right, Scott, thanks for calling in. We're talking with Rich down in Mexico, giving us his account about what's been happening down there with the drug cartels. If you want to join us, please do. Phone lines are open at 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. This came up in the Democratic presidential debate. Tulsi Gabbard accused Pete Buttigieg of calling for a more U.S. military intervention. And Buttigieg said that he was in favor of more joint military operations with the U.S. and Mexico south of the border. That was my understanding, Rich. How about that, having us getting involved in some kind of military partnership?
I think there's a lot of risk to that. It's because, you know, imagine what happens if a Mexican military officer or soldier, you know, shot an American citizen. I think, you know, the aid that has been in the past has been in surveillance and assistance in tracking down, whether it be banking or basically spying on them through our, you know, covert means, and giving that information to the local Mexican government, because, you know, boots on the ground, you know, U.S. weapons, and that sets a bad feeling amongst even the Mexicans who know something needs to change, because there's always this feeling of, you know, here's the U.S. telling us what to do again. But, you know, we're a sovereign country. We don't want another country telling us what to do. Even if we know we need help, we want that help to be respectful and something that doesn't make us look belittled. And some of that's politics. And, you know, I'm the first to admit, Trump isn't good at that when it comes to, you know, not belittling someone he's negotiating with. We've all seen that. But I think that's an area he needs to improve. And I think there's been some good results out of Mexico. Let's not make it sound like it's all negative.
What's been good? I mean, what's been good?
Well, yeah, Trump's been able to, you know, negotiate this Canada-Mexico trade agreement, which will hopefully go through, which benefits Mexico as much as it does the U.S. And they've also been able to get the Mexican National Guard to put more troops both on their southern border and northern border. And the way Trump did that, and I have to admit again, it was a little bullyish. It was, we're going to put a 10% tax on Mexican products unless Mexico, you help stem this flow of immigration. And since Mexico's main trading partner is the United States and the southern border, they kind of gently acquiesced. They didn't like it because, again, no one wants to feel like they're being spoken down to and forced into something when you're your own sovereign country. But Mexico has stepped up their efforts. And that actually made me a little surprised that Trump said this. And it could be a typical Trump off-the-cuff type of a comment, because it did seem like Mexico-U.S. relations were getting a little bit better. And then this sent a lot of the Mexican politicians into the, here we go again. You know, he's attacking us. Right. He's making us look like we're second class, people.
Let's take a call. We got Catherine in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I know it's not an easy thing to solve. What happened in Colombia? My mind's going blank. I heard it on Fox News today. Somebody was throwing this out there that I guess how they did it there was, it wasn't so much hand-to-hand combat type thing where they went in, but they were doing it maybe through financially, or what was the other thing, where anyway, it wasn't so obvious, but it was...
Yeah.
I can't think of the word.
I got where you're going, Catherine. Thanks for calling in. All right, she's right, though. 30 years ago, Colombia major drug cartels in Colombia, that seems to have gone away. But I don't know what worked down there.
Well, and, you know, something, it's different because, you know, there's different cultures or different scenarios at play. But I think from what I see, just from, you know, having the, you know, more Mexican friends and going to dinner with than I do kind of expat gringos, the solution they're looking for is a partnership, something where the U.S. can do what we're good at with our surveillance, where nobody really knows in the news media from a national pride standpoint that, you know, the U.S. is having to, quote, you know, help their neighbor to the south. You know, provide that intel covertly and then let the local Mexicans, you know, act on that information, both the financial side of it and, you know, arresting the different drug dealers like they did with El Chapo and giving them to the U.S. for prosecution.
Well, but just in perspective, I mean, this happened yesterday. Mexican security forces on Sunday killed seven more members of a presumed cartel assault force that rolled into a town near the Texas border and staged an hour-long attack, putting the overall death toll at 20. It's like the Wild West.
Oh, yes, and if you read that story, you'll see the front of the, they're basically city square administrative building. There's hundreds of bullet holes blasted into the front of it from the automatic weapons. And it literally is a war in the streets like you would see and expect to see over in the Middle East.
On the Stahlberg Law KVC text line, David and Arroyo Grande shares our pessimism. He says Mexico is always going to be like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Well, you know, it's interesting because on one hand, I see, you know, a lot of, you know, development happening at the education system. Some of the items are really improving in Mexico. But on other sides of the coin, there's still a long way to go. And a lot of it stems from just that when the police force is afraid to go after the cartels, who in the community will? Because, you know, every year around the Mexican elections, if you watch the news, you'll see a candidate for mayor gunned down, a candidate for governor, you know, 23 or 33, which I can't remember the exact number, but either one are horrendous. Those were candidates that were killed even before the election because they weren't, it's not that they're bought off by the cartel, it's that the cartel has an agreement with them, you leave us alone, we leave you alone.
Let me bring
so the candidates that didn't do that, they were assassinated.
Let me bring Craig into the conversation. Craig, what are you finding?
Yeah, I found this article on CNN.com from 2012 talking about Colombia used to have no extradition in the United States because they had actually paid off the politicians. Once they stopped that, then they would go in and extradite every criminal, drug criminal, to the United States, and that started to take apart their grip on the drug community down in Colombia.
Huh.
And it shows, there's a little further in the article, it talks about how there's been a slow erosion, and it is a great example for Mexico. Now, this is 2012 in Mexico on something that they could do for their drug gangs.
Yeah.
That is a big problem here, and something like that would help. That's why El Chapo was really sent to the U.S., because let's look at it. If a Mexican jury, a Mexican attorney, a Mexican, you know, prosecutor, if you're on a jury that finds a drug dealer cartel guilty, your whole family's at risk. And they say that publicly when they hang people on the, you know, the overpasses, you know. So the whole system is kind of cowering to the cartel's power to kind of do what they want when they want.
Rich from Mexico is joining us now, talking about what's happening with the drug cartels in Mexico and all the increased violence and whether or not the U.S. should be involved. If you want in on this conversation, we need to hear from you now, please. 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. You mentioned earlier about Trump considering declaring these drug cartels a terrorist organization. What would he gain from doing that other than just the rhetoric?
Well, there is the rhetoric, which for Trump I think is a big portion of all of his decisions. But designating a organization, a terrorist organization, would give the ability, probably the, you already have the ability to go after drug money under some earlier drug acts, but the big factor, this would make it a federal crime for U.S. citizens or businesses or banks to knowingly support, sell, transfer money, you know, assist in any of these cartel activities. So if you're purchasing guns and they wind up being found in the cartel raid and you are knowingly doing that, then, you know, you can have the anti-terrorism rules used against you. So it gives a little extra clout and criminal activity. But on the other flip side of that, personally, I think we over-label terrorist organizations, and that's one thing the argument against it is, look, this is a criminal activity. They're not committing terrorism in the traditional sense of some ideological belief where they're terrorizing the community. They're terrorizing the community basically for the almighty dollar at the end of the day and doing whatever they need to do to get it.
So let's end this on a positive spin. What's the positive about living in Mexico? What do you like about life down there?
You know, I think of that all the time because I get asked it so much, and a lot of it just has to do with the friendliness of the people. You know, everyone you meet down here, at least that I meet and interact with, is just, you know, it's that kind of Morro Bay, San Luis nice feeling. And I really like the feeling of, I don't want to call it the Wild West because that makes it sound like there's some out of controlness to it, but it just seems like, you know, for instance, if you're, some of the things that go on down here, if it, you'd never have them happen in the States because the law, the lawyers and the safety regulations, everything would shut it down. So there's a lot more personal responsibility. You see it in a lot of the locals' behavior, how they go about conducting their lives. And I'll also be honest, I'm a foodie. I just can't get enough of the good Mexican street tacos. I'm looking forward to them tonight. Maybe I'll send you a picture on Facebook, Dave.
Yeah, but what about the cost of living? Is it really that much cheaper to live in Mexico?
You know, it really is. I have a one-bedroom apartment here in, you know, how many blocks is it? Three blocks up from the beach. You know, it's $290 a month. The complex has a swimming pool. You know, power is a little bit extra, but that's, you know, $50 a month.
Wait a minute, stop. You pay $290 a month for a one-bedroom apartment?
Yeah. So a one-bedroom apartment, kitchen, little living room, in a nice kind of gated, I'll call it a gringo complex. But, you know, that price isn't that out of hand. It's not. There's cheaper places, but my wife and I like that one. And there's a swimming pool. You know, it's a nice place, a couple blocks up from the beach, and you know you can go out and have a dinner at a nice sit down restaurant for, you know, 200 pesos, which is $10 with drinks, and the cost of living just isn't that much down here. It's a good quality of life, especially if you're saving to pay for kids' colleges and other expenses.
Well, and then the last part, but how does that work? How long are you allowed to stay there as an American?
Depending on since they really are out to recruit American retirees and Canadian retirees, you can easily get an automatic 6-month tourist visa to stay here for 6 months at a time, which is what most people do. They spend the nice winter season down here. Today was, you know, 78 degrees. And then they go back for the hot 103-degree summer time frame. But we have a resident visa that lets us stay down here full-time. I think the cost to get it was $50 a piece. You know, we did the thumbprints, the iris scans, the why do we want to be here. But it is very easy to have a full-time visa to stay in Mexico, either temporarily or permanently.
All right, Rich, always learn a lot when you share time with us. We appreciate it, as always. Final thoughts about the drug cartels?
You know, I think the tough thing about the issue is everyone kind of wraps it up with the current administration. I think there was this problem with the cartels before Trump became president, and they're going to be there when Trump leaves. So if people can deal with this issue and try to not get their we love or hate Trump emotions involved, I think that would work best for Mexico and, most importantly, the Mexican people.
All right, Rich, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Have a great night.
All right, Rich checking in. Our man in Mexico. $290 a month for a one-bedroom apartment three blocks from the beach. And I've been to La Paz. I went back in the 90s. I'm sure it's changed a little bit in 20 years. But it was a very nice little town. A very nice town. That makes me want to go back and visit. Welcome back and wrap things up. You're listening to Hometown Radio for the Central Coast. It is the Dave Congleton Show. $290 for a one-bedroom apartment three blocks from the ocean. That's the way it is in La Paz. Thanks to Greg and Chris Springer from Vocal Arts Ensemble. Thanks to Bruce Van Vort from Finn's. Go to Finn's tomorrow night, $30, all you can eat. It's a benefit for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, 100% of the money. Thanks to John Lindsay. Congratulations to Bob in San Luis for winning our Guess the First Day of Rain contest. Thanks to Jerry Shea and Rich from Mexico. Thanks to Craig Hill, as always, for his help. And thanks to you for listening. That's all the thanks I've got. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver, get out of my chair. I'm coming home. Good night.